Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash.
However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show, live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, and live on YouTube. Check out our Comical Sports YouTube channel as well for all of y'all stopping in here today. We've got a really fun show planned for you today. Very basketball-centric today because we're right smack in the middle of the beginning of the second round of the NBA playoffs. 16 is down to 8. We've talked about, obviously, the Blazers. We talked about the elimination of the Pacers, the elimination of the Celtics. If you tuned into the Take It Easy radio show, the Take It Easy podcast, available anywhere and everywhere that you get podcasts, we also talked about the elimination of the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers. So, sayonara to those teams. Enjoy your summer. Now we have 8, and these 8 are starting to come into focus with what the rest of the postseason is going to look like across the NBA. And we've got 4 really fun series. So the last time we were on the air on Wednesday, so this is kind of becoming a running theme now, isn't it, as the NBA playoffs go along, is coming here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash and talking about Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks. Because a couple weeks ago, it was the headline of the week. The Dallas Mavericks were 2-0 up on the Clippers, and we were starting to have to prepare for the possibility that the Los Angeles Clippers were going to advance in the first round, or going to get eliminated in the first round. The Mavericks were going to advance, and the Mavericks were going to establish themselves as the new best team in the Western Conference, the up-and-comers, the babies establishing themselves at a time where generations are shifting in the NBA between the children running the between the children who are coming for the old heads' crowns, whether it be Kevin Durant, who we'll talk about later, or LeBron or Steph Curry or Damian Lillard, or the children, the younger generation with now 2 MVPs, Giannis and Jokic. Of course, Anthony Davis won the championship last year. We're starting to see the generational shifts. Jimmy Butler's in that generation. Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, as we're seeing those two have awesome playoff series where now both of them are up 1-0. And then we came back last week and we talked again about Luka Doncic after his injury, got the series to 2-2, but then the Mavericks won game 5 last Tuesday. And so once again, we unprepared for the Dallas Mavericks to advance, then had to re-prepare for the Dallas Mavericks to advance, and then got to see Kawhi Leonard look like that bad MF-er, because Kawhi Leonard just went to work on the Dallas Mavericks. And what I talked about after game 6 was that if the Clippers end up advancing and the Clippers end up going on a long playoff run, this is going to be memorable. Just that 42-point performance from Kawhi Leonard is going to be all-time kind of memorable. And so game 6, he put up 42 points in 3 quarters and carried the Clippers to a game 7 back in Los Angeles, which Vegas kind of felt that the Clippers would win rather handily. The Clippers did win handily at the behest of Marcus Morris and Luke Kennard, who I called bums on Sunday's episode of Wired Up. And now here we are. Kredd is gone. But Trae Young is establishing himself as the dominant force for the baby generation, as he now finds himself deadlocked in a 1-1 series against the 76ers, headed back to the ATL. And, oh, by the way, Joel Embiid has a partially torn meniscus. And that pretty much signs, seals, and delivers the 76ers' fate, even if it could be in the next round of the playoffs. And it signs, seals, and delivers the fact that the Milwaukee Bucks are probably going to end up – or, sorry, the Milwaukee Bucks-Brooklyn Nets series is probably going to decide who wins the the Eastern Conference, and ultimately probably who wins the championship. Sign, seal, deliver on that fate. And so Trae Young is now representing the baby generation in trying to take the Hawks further than anyone had them pegged for. The Atlanta Hawks were, you know, lucky to make the playoffs in the beginning. They get to the 5 seed. They beat the New York Knicks. And I look up and say, all right, this season is a success for the Atlanta Hawks. Whatever else they do from this point forward, they're good. Like, just winning game one against the 76ers was an overachievement. And I, mayor of Warriors South, was right there to proclaim victory for the Atlanta Hawks. But it makes me so much more excited to look up and see that, you know, Bogdanovich, by the way, just quick tangent here while we're talking about the Hawks. If Bogdanovich is your second best player, and that might be good enough to get the Atlanta Hawks past the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, I do think the Sixers will win the series, even with Joel Embiid's partially torn meniscus and the fact that Clint Capella just kept catching lob after lob after lob on Joel Embiid because they just forced him to keep jumping on his bum knee where his meniscus injury is going down. I still think the Sixers will end up winning that series. So I'm not, like, penciling down, oh, the Hawks are going to win. But like with Luka Doncic, we can start mentally preparing ourselves for a scenario where the Atlanta Hawks beat an injured Philadelphia 76ers team that probably should have been the 2 seed, probably should have been playing the Milwaukee Bucks in the second round, and probably should have been getting smacked by the Milwaukee Bucks. To the point I was going to make about Bogdanovich, and that was the lead in there, if Bogdanovich is the second best player on that Hawks team, imagine what he would have been like as the 4th best player on the Milwaukee Bucks this year. That Bucks team would have been so damn unbelievable. And they got P.J. Tucker to kind of be that supplement of a Bogdanovich, but Bogdanovich is a shot creator. And to be honest, looking back now, they would have sent DiVincenzo to the Sacramento Kings. And DiVincenzo's gone now from the team. He had to have surgery on his – I can't remember if it was meniscus or Achilles for our buddy Dante DiVincenzo. But they had to battle those injuries down the stretch, and they basically lost Bogdanovich because they couldn't avoid the tampering issue with the contract wink-wink deal beforehand, which was pretty common. They just – the league tampering rules structured it such that so that, you know, they kind of messed up in wink-wink, nod-nod, agreeing to a trade before – or agreeing to a contract before the sign-and-trade and then having it all blow up in their face. So that ended up coming back to backfire the Bucks as they now find themselves down 2-0 against the Brooklyn Nets. If you want full Milwaukee Bucks talk, by the way, Tuesday's podcast, we talked a lot about where the Milwaukee Bucks stand as a franchise, what their last all-in move is, et cetera, et cetera. But back to the Hawks and Sixers series. The Atlanta Hawks are fun because Trae Young is fun. And most people don't like Trae Young's game. I love me some Trae Young. Trae Young's basketball is fan-flippin-tastic, and Bogdanovich is a shot, can create his own shot, even if he's, you know, doesn't get as many because he's Bogdanovich. And DeAndre Hunter can be a 17-18 a game scorer in this offense, and Kevin Huerter is baby Klay Thompson. But the reason they brought in Gallinari and Bogdanovich and drafted DeAndre Hunter was because Kevin Huerter was emphatically not, Klay Thompson. He is baby Klay Thompson, where he can come off the bench and be a spark that hits some threes. He's more of a Duncan Robinson than he is a Klay Thompson. But anyways, John Collins is also there, and obviously Clint Capella. Like, the Hawks are fun and exciting to watch, and unfortunately they might end up losing this series to the Sixers, but Joel Embiid's injury just made it infinitely more interesting. And this is the generational shift right now, is Luka Doncic coulda, shoulda, woulda advanced. And I saw an interesting scenario on Bleacher Report today where they were talking about a Kemba for Porzingis trade. The one that I threw out there was John Wall for Porzingis. There's about a handful of contracts right now in the NBA that are like bad deals that teams could swap just for fresh starts, like a Westbrook-John Wall type swap. Maybe involving a pick here and there. But really, it's a lot of teams with, like, one bad contract that really want to reset the mold for what they're going to do from this point forward. And it's Kemba Walker, it's Kristaps Porzingis, it's John Wall, it's Buddy Hield on the Sacramento Kings. I might be forgetting one or two in there, but that's basically the names of, like, rough contracts the teams would be happy to move off of and swap with another team that has a bad contract just for, like, a change of scenery type of move. I thought that was an interesting scenario. But Luka obviously needs some help, and that help does not include giving Tim Hardaway $100 million. You're the Mavericks. The Mavericks haven't won a playoff series in 10 years, but you're better than that as the Dallas Mavericks. Do not give Tim Hardaway Jr. $100 million in free agency. Go let the Indiana Pacers do that. But obviously Luka needs the help, and the Hawks gave Trae Young the help. You know, they didn't double down on Kevin Huerter and John Collins, even though now they might give John Collins that contract extension this offseason, but they signed Danilo Gallinari to the largest contract of any non-All-Star older than 30 in NBA history. Very specific, but also very true. They gave Bogdan $72 million, and he's been a revelation for that team. They spent money to bring in guys to supplement, and obviously Clint Capella's trade was looming over because he only got to play like one game before the pandemic broke, and the Hawks season was cut short at that point. So those new additions plus the coaching shift puts the Atlanta Hawks in the position they're in now that I was preaching about back in 2020 and early 2019, that I believe in this Warriors South model. And the Warriors South came through here, and now they're 1-1 against the Philadelphia 76ers, and it's going to be interesting to see it play out across the next few games. But, you know, you can believe in the Warriors South. Believe in the Warriors South, and now they've got a fun series that, unfortunately, there's not another game till Friday, but, boy, I am interested in that one. For them boys over there in Warriors South, it is going to be really, really interesting to see how that one plays out. Ooh, Michael Porter Jr. might be injured for tonight's game. That is unfortunate. Let's see what Vegas is going with here. Looks like Vegas is leaning towards Denver a little bit to try and secure the dollars, the dollar bills, y'all. Yeah, they are. We're trying to get more bets on the Suns than Denver. They got that series evening up tonight between Denver and Phoenix. That series feels like it's a seven-gamer. I talked about that with both Gage Bridgeford and our buddy from House of Phoenix Suns. Nuggets analyst and Phoenix Suns analyst, which ironically that works out perfectly given where this series stands right now. But that series feels like it's going to go seven. And part of how you get there is either by Nuggets winning game two, or if the Suns win game two, the Nuggets make sure to get it 2-2 by the time it heads back to the old Ball Arena in Denver. I wanted to talk about Jokic here on the podcast real quick. And we've talked about Jokic before. I've thrown out the win shares per 48 number of Jokic being the MVP this year. And Nikola Jokic ended up getting that MVP that we all knew he was going to get. And as I've heard one person call him like the worst MVP of the last 20 years. And you could make an argument for it. Like Jokic is a product of the new NBA and where numbers generally trump the eye test. and European guys get some disrespect, but Jokic is probably some justification around it, because most people, one, don't know how Jokic does the things they do, but two, a lot of it gets pointed towards wins. Fair or not, a lot of this gets pointed to wins, and the Nuggets have been really good across the last few years. The Nuggets went to 7 games with the Portland Trailblazers in their first playoff run with the current iteration of the team, and last year made it to the Western Conference Finals after coming back from down 3-1 against the Jazz, coming back again from down 3-1 against the Los Angeles Clippers, and then getting bounced in the conference finals by the Lakers in a series where they could have gotten back into it with not Anthony Davis hitting a crazy buzzer beater in game 2 that basically sunk their chances of coming back in the series in the NBA bubble. Denver has been awesome this year, and they've been extremely fun to watch, and now that first game against the Phoenix Suns was exactly what I thought Denver could do, but Denver did not have an answer for Devin Booker defensively. And that ended up being the same thing that happened when they played the Blazers, and CJ McCollum went bonkers a few times. And the few times when they were playing against the Utah Jazz last year, where they didn't have all the answers going after Jamal Murray, and Jamal Murray put up a couple – I'm sorry, not Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell put up 50-point games against the Denver Nuggets in the playoffs last year. And so this came around a couple times, and one of the things that I found fascinating this time with the absence of Jamal Murray is that they just don't have options to defend the perimeter. And this is a problem that the Denver Nuggets have been trying to navigate for close to 2 years now, and it's the problem that a lot of these franchises end up navigating when they get the Jokic's in their organization. When they get, in the case of the Toronto Raptors, when you have DeMar DeRozan being as good as he's been, or in the case of the Portland Trailblazers, when you get a Damian Lillard and a CJ McCollum that make a Western Conference final run, where do you go all in? And this has been part of the difficulty that the Denver Nuggets have been going through for the past 4 to 5 years. No, not 4 to 5 years. Let's say 2 to 3 years, the Denver Nuggets, because you could point back to when they were like stuck going forward. But anyways, the point with the Denver Nuggets that I've been wrestling with since their bubble run last year is, what do the Denver Nuggets do when you have those pieces there? Michael Porter Jr. has been awesome stepping up for Jamal Murray. We talked about this on the podcast a while ago. Like, you have to replicate 27 points from Jamal Murray. How are you going to replicate that 27 as a team? Sometimes it's Austin Rivers, who is an addition after the Jamal Murray injury. Monte Morris had 28 in that magical game 5 that they won against the Portland Trailblazers. Sometimes it's Jamal Murray going for 21 points in a first quarter in game 6 against the Portland Trailblazers. And sometimes you end up just having game 1s against the Phoenix Suns where nobody really steps up and you score 105 points. But you look around and it's like, okay, Campazzo had 14. Well, that's something. Michael Porter Jr. had 15, so now you have to account for those points. So now you need to find 30 points. And Aaron Gordon had 18, and that's kind of nice. But then you look down the rest of the team and you're like, oh, nobody's really got an answer. Nobody's got an answer for what's going on here. And at the same time, you're going up against a Phoenix Suns team where 4 different players had over 20 points in the game for the Suns, which was the thing I was afraid of coming into the series for the Suns, was that they weren't going to be able to get enough offense outside of nuclear Devin Booker games. But this one, you had 21-11 from Chris Paul. You had 20-10 from DeAndre Ayton, 23-5-5 from Mikal Bridges, which is going to be huge going forward in the series. And against the Lakers, it was Cameron Payne that kind of came out of nowhere and went nuclear a couple times for the Phoenix Suns. But what ended up happening for the Suns in this game compared to the end of the Lakers series was that they got scoring from other places, and defense wins the game against the Nuggets, even though the Nuggets scored 105 points. A lot of it was garbage time towards the very end, the high-scoring fourth quarter when both teams were just kind of chucking up threes at that point. The Nuggets scored a lot of points, and this was the problem coming into the series that I thought would be a problem for the Suns, was that they weren't going to be able to defend Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon and Jokic, because those guys just have so much size, and the rest of the team was going to kind of be contained. And they did contain Monte Morris and Rivers and Campazzo. And now I'm looking up again, and I'm like, oh, the Suns are that good that the Nuggets can still have 22, 18, and 15 from Jokic, Gordon, and Porter. And they came out late in the game because it was a blowout. So they only played about 30 minutes between the three of them, 30 minutes a game. So per 36, let's see, if you add up the math on that. So per 36, you're looking at them scoring about 70 points between the three of them. So those three can score 70 points between them, and that's still not going to be enough to beat the Phoenix Suns. That was fascinating to me. Now, what happens in the nuclear games like what Brooklyn had going for them, where those best players end up scoring 80, 90 points between them? What about when Michael Porter Jr. hits 8 3-pointers like he did in Game 6 against the Portland Trailblazers? That's where the math starts to change on this a little bit, but still, you look around at the Phoenix Suns perimeter guys, and you can say, hey, they can score points pretty much at will at this point. And that is the cool thing that the Phoenix Suns have going for them, which is, and DeAndre Ayton and Chris Paul, those guys can score pretty much at whim. And only when their shooting goes away does it become a problem. But the good news for the Suns is that they're not super reliant on heavy shooting games. You look back at the Phoenix Suns here in the playoffs, and maybe that's not the best metric to go with, but they have played against really good teams, and they've won five out of seven games. And you look at these scoring outputs, 100, 115, 113, 122, and the 95-pointer that they lost against the Lakers pretty resoundingly. But then 102, and they took 99 to beat the Lakers in Game 1. So the Suns can score against even some of these best defenses, and the math totally changes on what Phoenix is trying to do against Denver, which brings me back to the original point about Jokic. The Nuggets are at their best when Jokic goes nuclear. But it's not sustainable for Jokic to go nuclear. We see that with Luka Doncic in the last series. We saw it with James Harden for years in the Houston Rockets. Guys start to wear out towards the end when they have these ridiculously high usage rates. And so Jokic, who's already not the most athletic guy in the world, not calling Jokic fat, but guys can get around him when he's forced to guard on the perimeter. It's the same thing Porzingis has, because it's the combination of height and not getting the first step. And so Jokic, you look at what Jokic has done across the past few seasons, where he goes from being, you know, someone who we're kind of thinking about, and he's playing a game 82 to make the playoffs against the Timberwolves, and they lose, and they get Michael Porter Jr. as a result of it. Like, it is a classic case of, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, because the Denver Nuggets missed the playoffs in 2018. They got the number 13 pick and end up drafting Michael Porter Jr. with that 13 pick. And that ends up being like losing a battle to win the war, because now Michael Porter Jr., second best player on that team, for a team that is ready to win a championship right now. Now, I also attested that they should have gone all in and traded Michael Porter Jr. for an established star like a Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal obviously wasn't 100% available, and looking back now, I don't think there's anyone they could go get who quite looks like Bradley Beal's fit into that team that would make it worth trading Michael Porter Jr. Now, at this point, the option might be trading Jamal Murray, but maybe that's a recency bias, and Jamal Murray can come back and affect that guard play. But they really do need a point guard, like, real bad. They need Jamal Murray back real bad next season. And the Denver Nuggets, Jokic should be starting to go for the all-in, let's push all our chips on the Jokic table. Let's put the high usage rates in the second half behind Jokic. Because at some point here, this is going to start feeling like a do-or-die situation, and the Phoenix Suns have some of the best perimeter defenses in the league. Teams have some of the lowest three-point shooting percentages when they play the Phoenix Suns, and this is a difficulty that the Denver Nuggets are going to have to discuss, are going to have to undergo more than once in this series. We already started to see the problems with it in the last game for them. The Nuggets ended up shooting as a team 35% from the three-point line, which is not bad. They hit 14 three-pointers as a team. It's not the worst thing in the world. And they hit more three-pointers than the Suns, to be fair. They just also took a shit ton of three-pointers. And they got, you know, slightly out-rebounded, and the Phoenix Suns got the free throw line about 14 times more than the Denver Nuggets. Ultimately, that being the difference in the game is just that three-point shooting and the free throws. But all of that is to encapsulate the point that the Denver Nuggets are best when they go all in through Jokic. And maybe he doesn't have to have, like, a ridiculously high usage rate. There's nuance to the situation. But they got to start using Jokic more. They got to start putting the offense through Jokic a little bit more because the Suns don't have anybody who can stop those bigs. Aaron Gordon, get aggressive, get to the lane, dunk the basketball, hit layups, hit four-foot turnaround jumpers. They don't have anyone that can match up with Jokic. Michael Porter Jr., when he drives, they don't have a guy, except for Mikal Bridges. They can stick Mikal Bridges on him, but they're better off with Bridges and the drive and Michael Porter Jr.'s size compared to Mikal Bridges than they are with Michael Porter Jr.'s spot-up ISO three-pointers. Now, if he's going to play Thompson that corner three and hit him at a consistent rate, that's a big plus for the Nuggets. But like in game one, the Suns would rather him sit outside and shoot the threes, and if he misses, all of a sudden you've taken that option out of the offense, and you know that with Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and Devin Booker's gotten better defensively. He's not perfect, but he's gotten better defensively. You know with those two options, the math is going to change almost 180 on what you're going to do against Devin Booker. Against the Nuggets with Campaso and Austin Rivers and Monte Morris, which, by the way, at some point you got to just start contemplating starting Monte Morris. I don't know when that moment is, but some point here you got to start looking at starting Monte Morris if you're the Denver Nuggets. So with the Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges perimeter defense, all of a sudden the offense has to start working more through Jokic. Doesn't have to be like Luka levels of working the offense through Jokic, but let Jokic shoot more than be a rebound distribute guy. That seems to be where they're at right now with their MVP of the league, only because the Phoenix Suns have a counter to the offense they've been running throughout the season. It's the same thing we all anticipated coming into the playoffs. We're just getting to see it now, which is, oh, they do really miss Jamal Murray's threat on the perimeter. And the fact that Chris Paul can pretty much switch onto one of these guys and at the bare minimum take away Michael Porter Jr. And Mikal Bridges can defend Aaron Gordon, and Jay Crowder can defend Aaron Gordon enough to make him settle. And so back cuts and pick and rolls, those are the big options right now to cut apart that Phoenix Suns defense, because you can get something in there if you're the Denver Nuggets. I don't know whether or not it's going to be enough given how good the Suns are offensively, but that's kind of the like go-to strategy to kind of tear up the Phoenix Suns a little bit. And so for Denver, Jokic is this super weapon. And unfortunately, you have what you have, and we might be looking at a Suns and Utah Jazz conference final the way things are going right now, which is not what I expected with Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell taking over the reins. If you would have told me last year in bubble time that that would be the Western Conference Finals, I would have just been stunned. And I'm not saying the Clippers are done by any stretch of the imagination. The Clippers are very much alive and well in that series. But it's crazy to see how this has gone down so far between the playoffs. Getting the top four seeds into the next round is probably, under normal circumstances, that wouldn't be strange. The NBA is the league that's best at legislating parity in their playoff series usually determine who the best team is. But we thought it was going to be some upsets this year. With Luka doing what he was doing, Damian Lillard's 50-point game, LeBron and the Lakers fall into the seven seed because of injuries and them getting bounced in the first round, and even the Grizzlies winning game one against the Jazz without Donovan Mitchell. We thought we were going to get at least one upset. We ended up getting no upsets. And that was the upset of the Western Conference playoffs, if we're being quite frank about it. That ended up being a little bit more upset. It ended up being a little bit more crazy than we initially thought it would be. When we came into this playoffs, we thought there was going to be some upsets in the West.
Whoa. Guys, this is a huge holiday today. Yeah. July 4th. Yeah. That's America's birthday.
True. Good point.
We got to do something on the best holiday of the year, right? I got an idea. Yeah. Beat up John Cena!
Thought I'd try out our interesting soundboard in between the breaks. If you're on YouTube, you didn't know what happened right there, but I thought I'd try out this little soundboard and just pick some random sounds to play here in between segments. Fireworks. Anyways, so moving on now. Let's talk about some Milwaukee Bucks and some Brooklyn Nets. And more specifically, let's talk about Kevin Durant, because I've talked a lot about this from the Milwaukee side. There hasn't been another game. I don't really have new perspective to bring you on the Milwaukee thing, but I am interested about the Kevin Durant stuff, because the Brooklyn Nets have been on fire so far in the playoffs. And Brooklyn has done it without, obviously, James Harden, and it makes the math interesting because – at some point, the Milwaukee Bucks should progress to the mean, but the problem is, even if the Milwaukee Bucks shoot well, this was still going to be a really close series. And the fact that they now have to win four games out of five against the Brooklyn Nets is starting to really start to mount on the hopes of the Milwaukee Bucks and my faith in the Milwaukee Bucks. It's starting to really dissipate a little bit. And so Brooklyn is on a crash course for the finals. And generational shift or not, which is something I've been obsessed with for a while now, Kevin Durant has been a revelation so far in the playoffs. And this has been kind of the beauty of what the Brooklyn Nets have been going through for a few years now. A couple of years. Kevin Durant signed just 2 years ago. That feels like 3 years ago that Kevin Durant signed with Brooklyn, but I guess pandemic time will do that to you. The 2019 feels like so long ago, and it's everything that's changed in my life. But anyway, so Kevin Durant has had this unbelievable playoff run so far for the Brooklyn Nets. And one of the interesting things Brooklyn has had going for them across 2 to 3 years, because pandemic time feels like 2 years in and of itself. But one thing that's been interesting for Brooklyn is that they've gone all in on this team, and Kevin Durant was this prized possession that they signed Kyrie Irving for, that they dumped two draft picks to move Allen Crabbe for. And I had said for a while, like, Kevin Durant is still one of the best players in the world. Kevin Durant was the best basketball player in the world from 2017 until he tore his Achilles in 2019. And Kevin Durant, we assumed Kevin Durant would be healthy coming back from the Achilles. But me personally, I just said, like, let's wait and see on what Kevin Durant ends up being post-Achilles injury. And lo and behold, Kevin Durant is awesome. Like, he's 32 points a game. In the playoffs, he's averaging, like, 34 points a game. Kevin Durant has been fantastic. And Brooklyn has won 6 out of 7 games. They've been the overwhelming Brooklyn team we all expected at the beginning of the season. I guess in January when they traded for James Harden. Live on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. That's, by the way, just as a quick side note here, just as a random tangent. Getting James Harden news breaking live on the air was probably the most fun I've ever had doing radio. Was just trying to desperately search for information, and this was right after it was our season premiere. It was our first episode on Open Talk Radio, and Martez was here producing, and it was just a mad dash for information between the Rockets and the Nets, and then flipping it for Oladipo after the fact and trying to figure out all the reactions to it. It was madness. And it's still, even now, months later, still just the pinnacle of doing radio for myself. It was just truly, truly fun and interesting, and it was fantastic to go through. But I just wanted to throw that out there as a quick side note. Back to the Brooklyn Nets situation. The Brooklyn team that we've seen since mid-January has been the totally overwhelming team we got now, even if in this Milwaukee series we've only gotten 43 seconds of James Harden. And this was the original team that we had like a year and a half to kind of anticipate and think about, because Kevin Durant signed on June 30th, 2019, didn't play for Brooklyn until December of 2020. So basically 2021, we had a year and a half to ruminate on that. And then they got James Harden, and we didn't really get this Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant team to ever really ponder. We got to do off-season talk around it, but, you know, the bubble led into the off-season, and we had the draft right after and free agency right after. We didn't really get a full cycle of talking about Kevin Durant and talking about Kyrie Irving playing together as teammates. And one of the things that's been a fascinating revelation is Kyrie Irving becoming a shooting guard even when James Harden is off the floor. And this is the way it probably should have been the whole way through. It was something that in my head I was like hitting my forehead when I was hearing it after the fact. I'm like, of course Kyrie Irving should be a shooting guard. That, of course, that makes perfect sense. I was like smacking my head like, but he's got these amazing dribble moves. Yeah, but he can spot up, shoot with the best of them. And he works better off ball than he does taking the ball up the floor. When he was on the Cavs, the offense worked better when it ran through LeBron James. And when he got to Boston, the offense worked better when it ran through Jason Tatum. Kyrie Irving ended up being the primary ball handler, but his ISO game, despite the excellent dribble moves, his ISO and pull-up game are not quite at the elite levels of the NBA, even though he's got these unbelievable dribble moves that allow him to shake defenders. But he's great with floaters, and he's great at getting to the rim. That's the big thing with Kyrie Irving. His moves allow him to get to the rim, but he's not the best pull-up shooter in the league. I mean, he's really good, but he's also really good at pretty much four different things offensively. He's the closest thing you have to, like, a four-tool basketball player offensively. So it's not like he's bad at any of these things, but Kyrie Irving is at his best when he's getting to the rim, when he's drawing contact, and when he's shooting floaters off of his dribble moves. He's a great spot-up shooter, though, and we're seeing that in the series where Kyrie Irving is becoming a great spot-up shooter, and the offense will run through Durant, or it will, under normal circumstances, it'll run through Harden, where he runs the ball up, run the pick-and-roll with Harden, because Harden is just excellent with the pick-and-roll, and what better pick-and-roll teammate to run with than Blake Griffin? You guys can't see my face on radio, but I'm, like, rolling my eyes a little bit because, obviously, not the same Blake Griffin, but man, Blake Griffin, I watched all of game one because I was super hyped to watch game one between the Nets and the Bucks, and I was just watching Blake Griffin. I was like, man, Blake Griffin looks awesome. And then I kind of like forgot, like, yeah, Blake Griffin is that guy. He just disappeared from our consciences for a long time. And so, yeah, Blake Griffin is awesome, dude. Blake Griffin was fantastic. And you know, Milwaukee and Brooklyn are going to play game three tomorrow. And obviously, just like it was, this has been the most engaged I've been in a playoff series since that Milwaukee-Toronto series back in 2019. And maybe the last game of Nuggets-Clippers. But like from start to finish, Bucks-Nets has been the most engaged I've been with a playoff series in a while. And my mind is just in full basketball mode right now. And seeing Kevin Durant, seeing Kyrie Irving dominate Milwaukee, and obviously Milwaukee's facing a must-win game now from this point going forward, because Milwaukee is kind of in must-win because they can't go down 3-0, Milwaukee is really, like, this is the thing I said at the start of the year, and I talked about this on Tuesday, so this is kind of repurposed content a little bit, but Milwaukee is going from, like, up 2-0, ready to go to the NBA Finals in a series that Kevin Durant would end up tearing his Achilles, and the Bucks could have probably won that championship in their first year of the team, like the core of the team with Giannis MVP, to bounce in the second round. Obviously, Giannis got hurt, and I still believe they would have beat the Miami Heat had Giannis not gotten hurt. Bounced in the second round again, and now they have no cap flexibility and minimal draft picks, only one all-in move left to make, and that's trading Chris Middleton for someone better than Chris Middleton, or trading Drew Holiday for someone better than Drew Holiday. It's a tough pill to swallow, nonetheless. But from the Milwaukee standpoint, obviously must win game. They should shoot better in the next game. I'd be interested. It's early, but let's see if there's early lines coming out right now from the gambling side of things. Yeah, looks like everyone's betting the Bucks. I'm sorry, everyone's betting the Nets and Brooklyn. I'm sorry, Vegas has taken all your money. Vegas is 76% on Brooklyn and 88% of money line bets on Brooklyn. So they are all in on the Milwaukee Bucks tomorrow. And you know what? I am all into. I'm going to lock in the Milwaukee Bucks against the Brooklyn Nets. Lock it in. Game over. Game set match. Milwaukee's going to win games three against the Brooklyn Nets. But to the point on the Brooklyn side, Kevin Durant and Kyrie have been a revelation that I wasn't expecting, because James Harden kind of becomes an integral part of that offense too. And one of the things I've been saying throughout it, Brooklyn's just so fun. They've got so many shooters lined up. Landry Shamet was an awesome pickup for them. They just gave up a first-round pick last offseason to get Landry Shamet. He's been an awesome revelation for them. White boy Joe Harris, I never realized how great he was. He's almost an all-star just being mini Klay Thompson and just sitting in the corner and draining threes. He's been an awesome revelation. Blake Griffin was hitting threes. Mike James has been cool. Yeah, they've got so many different shooters littered all across that floor for the Brooklyn Nets, and it really was cool to see it work out for them the way it's been. So to the point on that, Brooklyn, Kevin Durant, it's been a fun revelation to watch, and maybe Kevin Durant is happier than he has been, although he did go after Jay Williams the other day, and I thought they were buddies. They used to do the boardroom together. They were big sports business guys. I used to think Jay Will and Kevin Durant were buddies, which is probably how Jay Will had that story about Kevin Durant, that he was pissed that he got compared to Giannis. And the story is way too niche, I feel like, to not be true. When Kevin Durant denies it altogether, it seems like that's kind of an odd stance to take, and it's usually with the Twitter troll where the lie starts to fall apart a little bit. I don't know. Kevin Durant might be happier. I don't know. Maybe we need another book by Ethan Strauss to figure it out, or by someone else who's covering Brooklyn. I don't know. Wonder how Kevin Durant's doing. It's an interesting place. We haven't checked into baseball in a while. Let's see. My Padres are playing right now against the old Chicago Cubbies. Padres' best record in the American League right now. Shout out to them Pod Squad. It's making me happy right now. I've got the jersey right there. I don't know if I should put it on for the YouTube crowd yet or not. But we shall see later on as O'Grady steps into the pod for the Padres. Jake Arrieta back on the Chicago Cubs. I mean, I know it's an off day for the Cubs, but I'm looking around at the rest of the team like, eesh. Chicago has fallen on hard times, but also they're winning their division. It's kind of been a weird dichotomy for the Cubs so far. As obviously Yu Darvish was their big trade. Now he's a Padre, and he's been a great pitcher for the Padres so far this year. The 2-0 to O'Grady right now. What else is going on in the land of baseball? Trade deadline's still a good month away, so we'll wait on that. As O'Grady slaps one in the right field, Jason Hayward still getting that ridiculous money, tracks it down, and that's a single with two outs for my man Brian O'Grady. Pirates had a funny video. I was seeing the clip from McAfee talking about selling the Pirates, and the Pirates have fallen on hard times, but it's going to start looking up for Pittsburgh, because right now you've got one of the top four picks in next year's draft as things presently stand. You're going to have the number one pick in the draft in about a month. So, or I guess it's in July. Yeah, that's a month from now. A month from Friday, actually. So I think things will start looking like there's a plot for the Pirates, but I think it's understandable when any team bottoms out, especially in baseball, where the bottoming out can last a really long time. Look at what's going on for Detroit right now. They've been terrible for 5 years, still a lot of years away from turning it around. They've been like just a pitiful franchise for 5 years now. And sometimes turning the corner takes a lot to get there, but I look at Miami. They got that playoff win last year in the 60-game season, but that's probably going to be the peak of that Miami team. And so in baseball, it takes even longer because even when you get the top picks, you then have to wait 3 years before some of those picks actually start paying dividends. As is a ground ball over to second base, Caratini is going to be retired to end the inning. It takes a long time to pay dividends, but bottoming out is the best solution for turning a franchise around. It's just in baseball that can be infinitely frustrating because, for example, you have a team like the Nationals who got two generational stars at the first picks in the draft, Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg from bottoming out. The Astros got Carlos Correa, they got George Springer, and they got Alex Bregman at the top of the draft. But it took like 6 years for the vision to play out, and for the Nationals, it ended up taking a decade after those picks to win. So sometimes it takes a decade of irrelevance to turn it around, and that's why the process is more important and not getting too bogged down in the results. Not that big of a deal, people. Not the end of the world. And the thing I say with sports, we're not curing cancer out here. Not the end of the world. Having World Series teams are definitely more fun. And bottoming out is better than just being constantly bad and never having any hope of going forward. This applies to all sports leagues. Even if baseball, it's even more complex because less teams make the playoffs. It takes longer for cycles to turn around and things like that. I think we're going to call it here, folks. This has been a great way to kick off the Take It Easy radio show. If you're looking for some Julio Jones talk, tomorrow is the day. Check that out. Here on Open Talk and here on our YouTube channel. So thank you to all the people who have tuned in here on YouTube and stuck out with us. We got a lot of people in here today. I've seen like 20 people pop in and out. So thank you to everyone stopping in on our YouTube as well. And for all of the people here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, please download, follow, leave a 5-star rating and a review on the podcast everywhere and everywhere that you get podcasts. It's called Take It Easy. It's from, let me make sure I have this right for y'all. It's from me over at CKSAML Productions. So make sure that's the Take It Easy that you're looking for with the CSM logo kind of there in the middle. So make sure to check that out as well. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here, and as always, take it easy. Have a great rest of your day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.